two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to KSL Outdoors Radio, and as always, we appreciate you listening. Navi's coming up in a minute with your fish bites, and then we're going to talk more fishing after the top of the hour, and we'll get you another news update. But Randy Opplinger, who is our sport fish coordinator, has information on a tagged fish program that's not a tournament, but it does have some benefits to the angler and to the Division of Wildlife Resources because it's going to be very helpful in researching stocking patterns, fishing patterns, the pressure that's put on certain fishing outlets here in Utah. So we look forward to sharing the information with you as we begin the second hour. Right now I'm excited to talk about a new book that is out there, and I just want to read you an excerpt from it because I think it'll give you an idea, a flavor for the writing of this book, and see if you can guess what the topic is here. It reads, "Now the flourishing dragon acquired motion, its tongue of wind sweeping more moisture up with its elongated tail. As that tail dipped deeper into the Pacific, it grew larger, whipping the entire length of its mass into a spinning frenzy of water and warm tropical wind. Then the storm crawled aggressively across the ocean surface, stirring even bigger waves like deep maritime claw marks." Wow, that is a colorful way of talking about a storm that would bring huge avalanche dangers and consequences to the state of Utah. The book is called Dragons in the Snow, Avalanche Detectives in the Race to Beat Death in the Mountains. And to be honest, I wouldn't even know it existed had our buddy Craig Gordon didn't reach out to me on email. And you're involved with this. The author's name, by the way, is Edward Power. Tell our listeners how you and Ed got acquainted.
Yeah, hey, Tim, that is a brilliant reading, and man, it kind of gives me goosebumps to hear that narration, you know? I mean, part of me is, as you started in on that, I'm thinking, okay, this sounds like a really remarkable swell that I got to start paddling out on the North Shore on, and that's exactly kind of how this all manifested, right? So you've got all of this moisture, this Hawaiian pineapple express is what we call it, because that storm was generated during a hugely moist event in January of 2017. And it's an atmospheric river, and that collides with a bunch of cold air, and kaboom, it just fire hoses Utah. And remarkable reading there, Dragons in the Snow, Avalanche Detectives, and the Race to Beat Death in the Mountains. And like you said, Edward Power is the author, but he and I actually connected, and it was in January of 2017. And it was right after an avalanche accident that I was investigating in the Western Uintas. I was also in partnership with Snow Basin Resort and Solomon Equipment. We were hosting a Backcountry Avalanche 101. So I roll into the evening portion of that, and I, you know, told the class, yeah, we had just come back from investigating an avalanche accident. We go through the evening portion of the class, which is about 3 hours. And afterwards, you know, Ed came up to me and we started talking, and, you know, my slideshows tend to be visually enhancing, and I grab topics from all over the world that would be related to avalanches, and they're not necessarily always snow related. So a lot of times I bring in surfing pictures as well, and Ed was a and still is a surfer. We made that connection, and we fostered this relationship. He was a guy who has written quite a bit in his career, and you know, he said, "You know, you got something here." We started formulating a plan. I acted as a connector and helped get him in touch with some world-renowned avalanche forecasters and guides and high-end recreationists, people who are involved in avalanche rescue technology right here in Utah, and then some other stories across the West. We morphed it all together, and yeah, that's sort of that's sort of how we made the sausage for this. Again, Dragons in the Snow, and it's a book that was released in early September, and it's a great read.
I can't wait to read more of it just from the excerpts that I've seen. My guess is, and correct me if I'm wrong, you were doing weekly avalanche reports with us back in 2017, and we probably talked about that as it happened.
Oh, yeah, we totally did. So that that actually happened on a Wednesday. We looked at it on a Thursday. Guaranteed, we talked about it for our Saturday morning call-in. And if you remember, you know, the year of 1617, again, we're in this big atmospheric river kind of winter. The mountains were just getting plastered. And, you know, the remarkable thing of the stage that is set in the beginning of this story is this accident that occurs in the western Uintas with a group of very experienced snowboarders, and they're all from Utah. But it's sort of like at every turn, as the snow is starting to stack up and the storm is just starts raging, you know, the avalanche danger in the backcountry is definitely at high. It's bordering at extreme. And at the end of the day, this group triggers a large avalanche. A young, well-known snowboarder, Jeremy Jones, who's from the Salt Lake area, he winds up breaking two legs. Another gentleman is buried, but they find him. On the way out, I mean, at every turn, something goes wrong. And the remarkable thing is that it's a well-executed plan first thing in the morning, which starts at 6 in the morning and winds up in Timpanogos Regional Hospital at 3 the next morning. So it is an epic tale of truly life and death. You get to meet lots of characters. You get to meet the hardworking women and men who are in the snow and avalanche industry, and whether those are forecasters or guides or, like I said, people who have been very involved in rescue technology. A lot of it is here based in Utah, and guaranteed you will recognize faces, places, and names.
Was that among, and it says in the press release, so I'll ask you, was it that among the most dire avalanche advisories in your almost two decades?
Oh, absolutely. And I, you know, I remember I was just about to post the avalanche advisory, and it was all red and it was high, you know, so on a scale of 1 to 5, a red or a high avalanche advisory means that both human triggered and natural avalanches are likely, you know, so red is, you know, kind of a red flag. It's just like a traffic light. And the next step, so that's on a scale of 1 to 5, that's a level 4. The next step is black, and that is a level 5, and that's extreme. And right before I posted my advisory to head to the gym for the morning, I'm like, no, man, we're bordering on extreme. And it truly is. In 20 years with the Avalanche Center, 35 years working with snow and avalanches, it's about as dicey as I've ever seen it. Mm. I hit it on 5 and hit send, you know, and no regrets.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a tough thing for you because as a person that loves to ski and loves to be out in it, it's a double-edged sword for you because it becomes very dicey, not only for you as a skier, but for you as an avalanche forecaster.
Exactly. But, you know, the mountains, they offer so many exit strategies. And one of our best exit strategies is to, on days of high or extreme danger, we simply avoid the backcountry and we head to the resorts where avalanche reduction is work. And we get to parlay all the hard work that the women and men of the avalanche reduction teams put in before we even arrive in the parking lot. So that's the good news. The other good news is that there's always an exit strategy in the backcountry. And what you can do is just simply tone down your slope angles, or you simply avoid the types of terrain characteristics where, just like the book says, where the dragons in the snow, where the avalanche dragons live.
Yeah. Boy, and we're all, you know, it won't be long now, will it? We've already had a little dusting of snow in the high country. I just want to read, and I apologize, I'm not familiar with this author. I do know the book, though, Black Hawk Down. Everybody knows that. Mark Bowden, or is it Bowden?
Bowden, yeah, huh?
Yeah, Bowden. Did a little review of the book, and this is what he said. Being caught in the avalanche, or in an avalanche, is like being strapped to the front of a locomotive, writes Ed Power in this reverent and chilling book at one of our planet's most alluring and deadly phenomena. His description of what it's like to die buried in snow is worth the whole trip. To Power, the white stuff isn't just a transient form of H2O. It's a living thing gaining strength on our warming planet. Dragons in the Snow is rich, compelling reading, both a pound to the natural world and a warning to those who love it. Wow.
Pretty heavy, isn't
it? That's heavy stuff, Craig. So your hope is, we've only got a minute here, your hope is that people will enjoy the storytelling probably, as we have shared, but also learn something here, because a big part of what you've done over 20 years going in and out of classrooms and being on with us every week is to educate people and make sure that we don't have statistics out there, that we don't become statistics.
Exactly. So, you know, really, Tim, I mean, we can always be in the mountains, whether we're skiing or boarding or snowmobiling, hunting, hiking, snowshoeing, whatever it is, we can always be in the mountains. The thing that we want to do, and that message that we want to get across, is, you know, avoidance really is the best means and the safest means to travel in our mountains. And you can be very well rehearsed at rescue, and you need to be. But if we've got to use any of our rescue gear, it means that we've screwed up and we've triggered the avalanche. So we want everybody out there avoiding avalanches. And, you know, folks can read these great stories. They can get to know a lot of the characters that are behind all of the hard work that really a truly dedicated group of women and men put in. They dedicate their entire lives to this. People can find this book, Dragons in the Snow. It's a Mountaineers Books publishing, so mountaineersbooks.org. You can also go to Amazon. And, you know, I'm going to throw this out there. You see me at a trailhead, you see me in the grocery store or wherever it is, you got a copy of this book, I'm happy to sign it. I'm happy to talk about it. As you guys know, as all your listeners know, snow is my passion, but I'm even more passionate about keeping people on top of the greatest snow on Earth. And a portion of the proceeds from this book go to the Avalanche Center for Outreach and Education.
That's great stuff. Dragons in the Snow. My hope is that the next time I see you is just like the last time I saw you, and that's on a ski run somewhere here in Utah.
Exactly. Tim, thank you so much for having me. I look forward to talking to you. I look forward to talking to all of your listeners once the snow starts to fly.
All right, buddy. Dragons in the Snow. Again, it's Mountaineer Books, and our thanks to Craig Gordon, who will be joining us on a weekly basis to give you avalanche warnings as we get into the ski season, which has to be right around the corner. Don't go away. We'll talk fishing.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get stupid and women roll their eyes, and Tammy does a shimmy at the fish fry.
We need to change the lyrics to that. Navi does the shimmy at the fish fry.
I love that when he goes, his hands are yelling. I think that's the greatest line ever.
Time for some fish bites here as we wrap up hour number one. We're mentioning in our news of the week the concern over incidents or encounters with moose, and I've neglected to mention that if you go to our Facebook page at KSL Outdoors Radio, for those of you that use Facebook, there's a great video of a mom and son or daughter, baby moose, playing in the backyard of somebody's home in Park City with a hammock, and it's worth the view if you get a chance to see it. Not all encounters are dangerous ones, although the humans were smart enough just to take video and stay out of the way, because I'm sure Mama would have jumped in to protect the little one that was playing with the hammock at the time.
There's so many moose up there. You know, whenever I ski on the canyon side of Park City, we always see a moose, or two or three, and my wife will go, okay, look for moose when we have people skiing with us, because this is the place we see them, and we always see them. There's just a lot on that west side of Park City for sure.
Yeah. Speaking of our Facebook, there was another video, and I don't know that there's much audio to it. It's just a lot of running water, which you can hear in the background. But it's funny because they said this isn't the aquatics technician we were expecting to show up to help with kokanee spawning at the egg-taking facility in our northeast region. It was a muskrat who decided this was a perfect place to sit and do some cleaning. Luckily, it didn't seem to be too interested in eating the fish. I don't know if muskrat actually eat fish or...
No, muskrats are herbivorous, no question.
Okay.
But beaver will eat them.
Yeah, this is a muskrat, but it was pretty funny. The division caught it on video of this muskrat who seemed to be oblivious to the fact that all these beautiful fish were just sitting right there at his feet. Also,
my friend who traps muskrat uses a carrot as bait.
Really?
Yep.
Didn't know.
Yep.
I posted a picture yesterday, and I'm glad that you caught one thing, that the photo is actually 4 years old. And the reason I posted it is because the Division of Wildlife actually put it up there of a 33-inch, 19-pound rainbow at Strawberry. And I neglected to notice this was 4 years ago. And I think, since you brought it to my attention, that we probably talked about it at the time.
We did.
And the division's reason for posting it again is because it was caught the second week of September, and they're trying to make the point that there may be another monster lurking out there, and it's a good time to go fishing.
Well, that picture's worth talking about many times. It's an incredible fish, but it is a good time to go fishing, Tim. It's last week I kind of predicted we were going to have a little bit of a improvement in the fishing, and it turned out to be true. Everybody I know who went out did actually much better than we suspected, because the waters are still a bit warm and they're still a bit high, particularly the rivers, but the lakes are cooling fast. The depth of the water takes longer to heat, and there's not as much time in the day because the days are so much shorter and the nights are so much longer that they're cooling off really fast. So we're on our way into the thick of fishing. In regards to my fly fishing course, I'm totally sold out, Phil. I mean, Tim, I hate to tell you that, but I can't fit any more people in my classes because everybody wants to fish now. COVID has just made everybody go crazy about fishing, and if you don't know how to fly fish, it really is a tragedy. So I'm full, but that shouldn't stop you. I'm thinking about opening another class because I have so much overlap and such a big waiting list.
Are you full on two classes?
Yeah.
So you'd open up a third?
I'm thinking about it. You know, it depends on my time. I get, you know, burning it at both ends. I get worn out. But it just seems like I should, because I hate people being turned away, because there's never been more people that have tried to get in my fly fishing class than right now. And it's because they spent the summer in the woods and they said, I should learn how to do this.
Yeah.
What fly fishing is something to do in the places you love. My wife says trout live in the most beautiful places in the world, and that could be so true. So, yeah, it's something to do out there.
You know, it's interesting. We on Utah's Morning News, we try to find positives to this mess that is the pandemic. And if there's one positive thing, you can see it in the tracking of the sales of RVs. You can see it with the lack of availability for camp spots that are close to civilization. People have rediscovered what it means to get out, get away, and recharge your battery in the great outdoors. And it sounds like you're the beneficiary of that.
Yeah, or punished by it, because I can't say no, even though I'm overwhelmed. But you're right. the world just looks better from the river out. And because we were forced to go places other than downtown and to the movies, we reconnected. And honestly, I believe if you don't understand where you are in nature, you don't understand who you are. But more importantly, every psychologist and philosopher has said that if you want to find peace, find nature. And people have learned that. And so, yeah, fly fishing, you know, it's so hard to put into words what it is, but it heals you. Standing in the river and listening and watching, whether you're catching a fish or not, it just gives you perspective, and it's healthy.
Well, and
everybody needs that.
From my experience, and I don't have near, the years and miles you do on it, but you feel like you're a part of that
Absolutely.
River when you're there. And you're matching the hatch, and you're making yourself part of the environment around you. And it really is a difference in being a part of it and just passing by and taking pictures of
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. Redford, he wrote way back before when he was doing the River Runs Through It, and he was driving up to Sundance at that time. He owned it or whatever. And he said he would drive up the Provo River, and he would see an angler in the morning fog casting on the water. And he says, at no time had he ever thought that a picture in nature was improved by a human. But he says that was true when it came to fly fishing, that human being out there with a hat on, casting in the mist, in silence, actually enhanced nature. And usually humans don't enhance nature. They ruin it. But this wasn't the case.
You know what I think of when you share that is the day we sat on the banks of the Madison in Yellowstone. Just before the gates closed, and watched a guy out there. I think he was actually smoking a pipe, if I remember right.
Absolutely.
And the smoke just rising as the fog was also coming up off of the water. Oh, I need more of that.
I still remember that too, Tim. It was like bidding the river adieu for another winter that was coming. It was just so eloquent to see that.
Well, and you ad-libbed your way beautifully through, I put the camera on you, and you ad-libbed your way through it beautifully. I need more of those moments with you, Namodowskis.
Yeah, fishing makes you wax poetic. Well, that's the truth.
All right, buddy, do us a favor, and I know you will if you happen to have another class. We'll be the first to know, right?
Absolutely.
All right, stand by. Randy Oplinger, our sport fish coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources, joins us right after ABC News at the top of the hour. Don't go away.
La la, oh my, things get around the past five. Men get stupid and women.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.